This is the official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the official EFL podcast with me, Mark Clement. And if you wanted any further indication that the football season is heading towards its final quarter, then look no further than 74-year-old Neil Warnock coming out of retirement to help Huddersfield Town, almost 30 years after his first spell when he led the club to third-tier promotion. First up for us this week, we're checking in with one of Huddersfield's Sky Bet Championship relegation rivals and a defender who's a long way from home.
I guess if, you know, I could go back to the 16-year-old me that moved over with just, you know, a backpack, a couple of little belongings to, you know, create the life that I have and been on the journey I have, I wouldn't believe it could happen.
And 10 scored, none conceded in the week when his team played their 5,000th league game for this man.
You know, all being well, Bolton Wanderers will get to 6,000 games and then everyone will remember the 5,000th game and what the team looked like, who was in that team, who was the manager, who was on the coaching staff. So as I said, we've left our little print in the history of Bolton Wanderers, which is great credit to everybody.
It's the official EFL podcast. What a last 12 months it has been for Bailey Wright. Internationally, in the autumn, he was a member of the Australia World Cup squad, eventually knocked out by winners Argentina in the quarterfinals. Domestically, he was the backbone of Sunderland's defence, promoted to the Sky Bet Championship last season. But on January transfer deadline day 2023, with appearances at the Stadium of Light scarce, he joined Rotherham United on loan, only to be concussed in the first minute of his debut for them. Now, I'm not laughing at head injuries here, Bailey. I'm laughing at the fact if anybody was going to get concussed within a minute of their debut, it was going to be you. And it takes a bit to keep you down and wheel you off 3 minutes after you've come on.
Yeah, it was one of them, I couldn't believe it happened. And it wasn't even really a challenge that you'd expect to get concussed or anything. I just got caught right across the jaw, basically. And next minute, I was lying on the deck, completely just knocked out, really. So not the debut that you dream of. But like you said there, I guess kind of the debut someone probably would expect from me. But yeah, frustrating, but managed to get my full debut in last night. So that was nice to be on the pitch longer than, I'd say a minute was being generous, if I'm honest. I don't know if I was even on that long.
Oh, well, obviously the timekeeper in the game in question wasn't on the ball because they allocated you, I think, three for that particular one. We'll skirt very gently around your full debut because obviously there was a late turnaround at Reading, et cetera, et cetera. But I mentioned the 12 months because it seems to me within that mix of that year, you've had just about every gambit, haven't you? From the jubilation of promotion and the high of once again being selected for your country for a major tournament, I guess, not getting as many appearances you might have hoped for and speculation about where you might have gone in January. I mean, you footballers do get pulled from pillar to post, Bailey.
Yeah, I think it's the beauty of the game as well. It's also difficult, especially when you have a family and you're trying to plan and predict where you could be. But there's also the element of the beauty of football is that the journey can take you anywhere. You know, sometimes for good, sometimes, you don't necessarily know what's around the corner. But like you say, the last 12 months I've had highs of, you know, promotion and going to the World Cup and, you know, maybe the lows of maybe not playing as much as I would have liked at Sunderland, but nonetheless still really enjoying my time there. And, you know, I've got a great opportunity here when Rotherham gave me the opportunity to come on loan and help have a good finish to the season here. So I look at them all as really good positives. I've enjoyed settling in at Rotherham, a new group of lads. A really good club, good manager, and, you know, we've got certainly a challenge on our hands, but, you know, looking forward to being part of it. So, yeah, it's, like I said, you know, I guess as a younger lad, those ups and downs are more difficult or it's difficult to stay level through, I guess, all the experiences, the more experience you get. And I guess that is what experience is, going through all these things. But yeah, I love every minute of the ride and the journey of football. I just, you know, pinch myself that I am living the dream. Sometimes it goes as you plan, sometimes it doesn't. But nonetheless, I count myself, you know, very lucky to do what I do.
Here's the question that's sometimes difficult to ask, but I think I know you well enough to ask it. And if I don't, we're recording this 250 miles apart, so I feel fairly safe. Does a footballer ever, as they are moving towards a potential promotion, think that it will spell less opportunity, even obsolescence and being moved on, for a proportion of the squad? Is it ever discussed, or is it blinkers on, get the promotion, it's good for the CV? You understand the notion of the question?
Yeah, of course. And I think, obviously, numerous factors. I would be lying if I said those thoughts don't come into your head. End of the day, you want to, every footballer wants to play on a Saturday. You want that, you know, you train all week to go and let loose on a Saturday, let loose on a Tuesday, and try to win a game of football. You know, that winning feeling and being part of a winning side is just, it's like a drug. It's so addictive. You just want to be feeling it more and more. So that's, you know, you want to be out there competing with your mates. And sometimes that's not always, you know, that's not always guaranteed, but I look at it, you know, getting promoted with Sunderland was incredible. And you know, I still played a few games this season. Obviously nowhere near as regular as I would have liked. And, you know, I've got to be honest, the club have been brilliant with me. They've been honest. You know, got a really good young group of players with so much potential. And, you know, to be part of, I guess, as a senior player and see how the young players come through, you know your role varies. It's not just about you playing on the pitch. It's about helping the young lads along, as senior lads did for me when I was a younger lad. I always feel that's important. You know, set the culture, set the standard around the place. You know, I take pride in leading and all them sort of things, and making sure the environment's a good one for lads to come into. So as much as it is about playing, there's certain elements of it that, you know, you can start preparing yourself maybe for your next step in your career and learning a little about a lot of different things that happen in a football environment. So you do weigh up whether you're going to play or not, but at the same time, you know, you don't want any guarantees. There's no guarantees that you're going to play anywhere. So the competition for place is important. It gets the best out of individuals, and it drives you to be better. If you're not playing, you've got to be better than those ahead of you, and you've got to keep pushing each other. So that's just a football environment, I guess, regardless of what league you're in. And, you know, a lot of new players have come in at Sunderland and a lot of really good quality. So, you know, I've got a lot of respect for lads who have played ahead of me. I'm not naive to say that I should be playing, things like that. I see what these boys do day in, day out, and, you know, every credit to them, the lads who are playing. I push them as hard as I can, and, you know, sometimes you fall short. You can say you've done it properly. You've not cheated and not slacked off. So now, like I said, it's a good opportunity for me here at Rotherham, and I hate going alone and saying I want to play games. I'm just going to play games. I think that's a little bit disrespectful sometimes to the environment you go into. I think there's a really good group of lads here, and I want to be part of the group that's pushing to, you know, stay in the championship this season and have a good, you know, finish to the season. Whether that means I'm starting, whether I'm on the bench, or if I miss out, it is what it is. It's competition for places, and you need that wherever you go.
I wonder whether you're in a dangerous position, in so much as I think because of what Rotherham have achieved so far, I don't think your name has got kind of pulled in to the relegation contenders. You will know you're too close for comfort, but the names that are getting bandied about are Blackpool, Huddersfield, Wigan, Cardiff. When there's just that little buffer, is that a dangerous place to be, that it might lull you into thinking you're not in there? Because obviously what you don't want is to be dropping into those places come the last couple of games of the season.
There's still so much football to be played. Like, we've still got a lot of games ahead, and the division's so tight. So, I mean, we're looking at it as each game as it comes, and there's 3 points up for grabs, and try to win that game and see where that takes you. I think, we've got some real experience in the group. We obviously want to climb that table and finish as high as we can. I guess the talk of anyone can, you know, from the whole bottom half of the table could be pulled into that, even people slightly higher. So it's been a real competitive division, as it always is. I wouldn't say there's any benefits here or there of how you do it. It's how you approach each game. And, you know, we've got a really hardworking group and a real togetherness. I can feel that already after, you know, a short time. I've enjoyed working. I've got, you know, a real belief in what we're doing, and I can see that in everyone else. So I think that's the most important thing, that the atmosphere is good, the belief's good, and you just go into the games, and I'm sure that will put us in a good position come end of the season.
I mentioned the World Cup. Because you've spent your entire senior football career in England, you've now actually nearly spent half your life playing over here. Do you feel as Aussie as you once were?
It's funny, actually. I do. I still feel so Aussie, but sometimes I forget if I still sound Aussie. And one of the boys reminded me yesterday that I still sound very Aussie. So that made me happy. But yeah, I guess my whole adult life, I've lived in England, and I absolutely love it. It's, you know, my family, my girls are born here. My wife's from here. We've started our own family here. So I guess if, you know, I could go back to the 16-year-old me that moved over with just, you know, a backpack, a couple of little belongings to, you know, create the life that I have and been on the journey I have, I wouldn't believe it could happen. So,
Bailey, is that serious? You did literally just have a big backpack. You didn't even have a couple of big suitcases.
One suitcase, I think. Yeah, I moved into digs.
This is to move in as a part of the youth set up at Preston. Obviously, you've subsequently been at Bristol City before going to Sunderland.
Yeah, I literally turned up with, I think, a suitcase, backpack to my digs, and, you know, Preston North End was where I did my apprenticeship and learnt my trade here in England, and I loved every minute of it. I moved into the digs. You know, everyone in the youth team lived there. You know, probably the smallest room in the digs, it was bunk beds. You had to, like, open the door, wriggle in, close it. And I was in the top bunk for my first 2 years. And, you know, it was a real change in environment and a shock. But I was playing football every day. I was, you know, getting paid to play football. We were getting fed. We had, you know, anything you could ever wish for. It was just incredible. So I guess at, you know, that stage, I had no idea where the journey was going to take me. And I still am excited to see where it is going to still continue. But, yeah, I never forget where I come from. Obviously, all my family's still in Melbourne, back home. And, you know, I still very much feel very Aussie. And, you know, being part of that World Cup group and the culture and what we're all about, our sort of mateship as a group, was just a real tough group of Aussies just going out and taking on the world. And, you know, you feel it, how Aussie you are in that group. It reminds you, it's just, we're a big family.
I mean, we've chatted in previous interviews about the Aussie sporting psyche, because you lot would get competitive over a couple of window drips rolling down, wouldn't you? It's just, I mean, I wonder if that has just given you that extra little impetus, and the fact that, I suppose, when you know to make it on the bigger stage, you will have to leave home at a relatively young age. Maybe that battle hardens you when you're 12, 13, 14, knowing at some point you're going to have to get on that aeroplane and travel, what is it, about 12,000 miles, is it, Melbourne to UK?
I know, door to door, it's about 24, 25 hours of travel.
Oh, is it? Oh, yeah.
So it's a long old journey, but football in Australia has evolved a lot from sort of 15, 16 years ago. It's, you know, the A-League's become much stronger, the club's set up, you know, they have academies. We still have a long way to go, and, you know, the steps we've taken, the World Cup and the investment that will go into our football, and, you know, the interest of kids seeing, you know, a national team do really well, the men and women. You know, we've got the Women's World Cup coming up in the summer, and that, you know, women's football, the Matildas have just gone from strength to strength. So as our game as a whole, there's, you know, it's creating more opportunities, better pathways, better programs for the next generation. So I guess when I look at when I my opportunities were very limited in Australia, and it was I always knew I wanted to come to England. It's just not easy. So when I had that opportunity, I was going to make sure that, you know, if it wasn't to be, it wasn't because I didn't give it my all. It's just because I wasn't good enough, and I could accept that. But if I didn't give my all, then that I couldn't accept. And that's like anything in life. And any approach I've had to sport is to give it everything and enjoy it. And if you're not good enough, you're not good enough. So fortunately it worked out okay. But I guess leaving home at 16, I didn't feel 16. I don't look at it like that. Sometimes now I look at some of my nephews who are 16 years old, and I look and think, I couldn't imagine him, you know, moving to the other side of the world at that age. And you sort of, I guess I just was in this little bubble of just tunnel vision of what I saw for myself and what I wanted to do. And fortunately for me, you know, my family gave me the opportunity to go and follow my dreams, and Preston offered me that opportunity to do it with them and go from there. So it's like I said, you never know where the journey can take you. You just got to enjoy the ride, give it everything. And, you know, fortunately I've had some incredible experiences, and I've also had some lows, but, I love it. It's the best.
I think it's a good mantra for life. And it kind of reminds me of an interview I heard with Chris Martin from Coldplay quite a lot of years ago now. I think he was asked, how come you keep having these enormous world smashes? You know, love them or hate them, Coldplay are ginormous around the world. And he said, quite simply, we just try really hard. And I thought, do you know what? It's not a bad mantra, Bailey, is it, for life? Yeah. I mean, you do the best you can with the resources you've got. You make the decisions that need to be made when they need making. But above all, you give it every vestige of your energy when that moment comes along. And it's obviously what you've done.
Yeah, exactly. I think commitment, desire, mentality, it's free. It doesn't require any talent. It doesn't require any skill. It's just an attitude to up and go. And, you know, every training session is an opportunity to be competitive, to drive yourself. Every day is an opportunity to do something extra in training or work on your weaknesses. And, you know, if you're not, you're the only one to blame. I guess there's natural ability and skills and technique that, you know, give you a platform to develop on, and everyone has different levels of that. But ultimately it is your mentality that carries you through. Throughout my career, I've seen some really talented players who have not gone on to have, you know, as successful careers as you'd think. And, you know, for various reasons, sometimes it's injury, sometimes it's mentality. Sometimes, you know, there is the element of right place, right time too. So, you know, I think, I hate using the word luck, but I think if you do commit and you have that real, like you say, just try hard attitude, then you increase your chance to be in the right place at the right time and impress the right person, and, you know, not be afraid to ruffle a few feathers sometimes.
Sky Bet Championship fixtures this coming weekend. Friday night, Cardiff City got their first league win in 13 in midweek. Entertain Reading, their win over Bailey's Rotherham was just their fifth in 20 in the league. Then on Saturday, early kickoff, Sheffield United in second, travel to Millwall. Blackburn at home to Swansea. Huddersfield with Neil Warnock at the helm for the first time entertain Birmingham City. Luton v Burnley is probably your game of the day. The leaders, who equaled a 110-year-old club record with their 10th consecutive league win last weekend. Middlesbrough entertain QPR, just one league win in 16 for them. Bailey's Rotherham are at home to Coventry. His parent club, Sunderland, entertain Bristol City. It's Wigan against Norwich, and then on Monday night, Slaven Bilic against his former team as Watford entertain West Brom. Are you a sort of look at what you have to do and let the rest take care of the rest, or are you a kind of get on your iPad and have a look at the forensic detail of all the other teams in the division, who's going well, who's not, who's got who coming up, etc.? What's your approach, Bailey?
Quite simply, the two teams I follow, Sunderland and Rotherham. Obviously, always obviously keep an eye on who Sunderland are playing, and obviously I'm still a Sunderland player, so obviously want the boys to do well, and obviously who we play next year at Rotherham. That's my sole focus now, is here at Rotherham doing well. And yeah, I guess my preparation is, I've heard you read out the fixtures there, but I don't really look at who everyone has. I definitely look at results afterwards. I like seeing how everyone's gone, and sometimes looking on how ex teams have done, or how some of your mates have done at various clubs. I think most footballers will probably look at results, but not look at, you know, who everyone has before your game, for example. So a lot of work goes into preparing for our games. I think, you know, the preparation that the analysts do, the manager, the coaching staff to prepare us for our games, you're absorbing so much information that, you know, that should be what our focus is. I know everyone's different. I like to do a little bit of research on everyone I play, on who my opponents could be. Of course, a lot of the time you've played against them over various moments in your career, but it never hurts to refresh the mind and sort of do a bit of visualization and get yourself ready for a game. So, yeah, it's very much just focus on the controllables. It's a bit cliche, but it's put us in good stead so far.
I bet the Coventry City front line are listening to this thinking, oh, Lord, we're in for one this weekend. Final question. You have been preparing for life after football. You have done a sporting director's. Is that a master's course that you've done?
It is, yeah.
Masters. Is that a direction you feel you might go, maybe rather than slipping into coaching? Could you see yourself, you know, working over analytics, talent recruitment, the full sort of package perhaps at a sporting club?
Yeah, I guess one of the main reasons for wanting to do the degree, and obviously I'm delighted now I have done it, and I graduated there in December, and now it's about evolving myself onto the next thing. And, you know, I'm not decided on what I want to do. I'm still very much focused on my footballing career and hoping I've got good many years ahead of playing professionally. But I'm also one of them. I love sport. I really enjoy leading and working in teams. I like being part of strong and like being part of and developing cultures, and I guess leading, you know, the course. So it gives you on paper, the degree of the sporting directorship, which is leading and running sports organisations, which, you know, opens more doors than just football. Obviously, football is very much my passion and love, but I love all sports, and I wanted to make sure that, you know, I like to be occupied, I like to be busy, I like to, you know, see what I'm going to do when I transition. I want to move straight into something. I think the element of coaching I really like. I've not done a lot of it. It's something that's next on my journey to work on and get those badges, and then see what's for me. Because I think whilst playing, we, you know, obviously now I've got two beautiful little girls that take up a lot of our time, and it is difficult. But you really do have so much spare time, in my opinion, I think, as a footballer. And you know, the PFA offer a lot of funding for lads to do a lot of self-development, CPD, and provide funding towards education. So I think we'd be stupid not to take that and keep improving ourselves, because the career we have is an incredible career, but it is so short. And a lot of people's careers don't really, you know, kick off until late 30s and so on. And, you know, I guess the beauty of it is you can go and pursue another career. It doesn't have to be in sport. It could be anything. I feel you have a head start because you start a career young, and you know, it is limited to how long you can do it. But yeah, it excites me about what I want to do when the day does come and I have to hang the boots up. I just want to make sure that I know that I'm more prepared and ready, that I can step into and feel comfortable doing something different, and I guess apply for jobs and understand how things work on the other side, so to speak. You know, I've always been part of football clubs and always been curious to see why things happen the way they do, how different clubs do it, you know, what the model is, who's in charge of the model, who puts it into place. And I guess you take a little bit of every out of everywhere you've been, and you try to, I guess, think, well, how would you want to do it? And I guess that's, you learn that on your journey. But the course was brilliant for networking and, learning about how other people approach different situations in their professions, and, getting firsthand of experience of people that live and breathe sporting directorship or leading sports organizations, or, people from other industries. So yeah, it was a really good course and one I highly recommend. I think, a lot of players, I'd say if you can do some self-development, go for it, because it's very rewarding when you get comfortable being uncomfortable, and that was a big part of the uni course.
Always learning. It's been a pleasure. Thanks for joining us on the official EFL podcast.
Thanks for having me on. Great to see you.
The official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Difficult to believe that 3.5 years ago, Bolton Wanderers were very close to going out of business. Last weekend, they celebrated playing their 5,000th league game with a crushing 5-0 Sky Bet League One victory at Peterborough United. And that's a scoreline that they repeated in midweek against MK Dons. It is now 5 consecutive wins and 6 points off an automatic promotion place for Ian Everett's team. So here's the question, Ian, okay? I'm going to give you a 1-0 or I'm going to give you a 5-1. I know you love a clean sheet. So what are you going to go for, the 5-1 or the 1-0?
Well, the ex-player in me, would being a centre-back, would go for 1-0. But funny enough, Clem, I've developed into an attacking manager. So I'll take the 5-1.
Yeah, it was a loaded question because from what I can see, you actually prefer to defend a lead by attacking rather than sit back like some do and soak it up.
Yeah, I mean, there's two ways to look at it. There's no right or wrong way. There's just however you perceive to be the right way, and you take learnings from your playing career, things you've picked up from managers. And I just feel that the best form of defence is attack. We've kept an awful lot of clean sheets this season, and that, predominantly everyone just points the finger at the goalkeeper and the defenders saying what a great job they're doing. But actually, the strikers are just doing equally as important job. The way they press from the front, the way we keep the ball away from our goal, everyone's bought into that, the strikers included. So we're all celebrating clean sheets, not just the defenders. And in terms of managing the ball and being an in-possession team, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to understand that if we've got the ball, the opposition can't score. So that's the way we see it, and that's the way we try to do things.
So do you also counsel the boys that occasionally with that strategy, it might leave you a bit open, you might be susceptible, and occasionally it'll go wrong, but you encourage them to be risk-averse on law of averages? It's going to work out in your favour more times than it doesn't.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the game, isn't it? The game is risk and reward. And it's how much you're willing to risk to gain those rewards. And yes, sometimes we're open, we're expansive, but the way we've recruited players that are really athletic, players that can defend 1v1s in large spaces. And when we are getting countered on and we are a bit open because we've given the ball away, it's how quickly we react as a team. There's no disappointment, there's no bad body language, it's just a positive action. Go and hunt the ball back, press the ball back, recover, and we rely on our defenders to defend those large spaces 1v1.
Now listen, you're immersed in the modern era, but I did mention that incredible stat. There's only 4 other teams, Preston, Burnley, Wolves and Derby, that have achieved the 5,000 league games. Did you manage to stop for a moment? I don't know, savour, say to the boys, feel part of history here today? Or are you so immersed in the moment of trying to get 3 points last weekend?
No, listen, we're all fans of the game, aren't we? And I think it's important that we remember the history of the game. And to be one of those 5 clubs is a real big honour. And we're actually honoured and privileged to be at a club that have achieved that landmark. And I just said to the players pre-match that it was an opportunity for us to leave a tiny footprint in the sand on the history of this football club. Obviously, the bigger picture is we want to do great things and win promotions and win trophies, etc. But on that day, nobody could ever take that performance away from us. So I wanted us to go out, attack the game and play with the freedom to try and create that small bit of history. And the players, I've got to say, implemented that plan to perfection. They were outstanding on the day, which is great. And now they've left their dent in the sand for all future Bolton Wanderers fans to remember and look back on.
Do you know what, Ian? It's really important that, I think, that just that sense of belonging, that sense of being part of a chain, because I often think the fans are the ones that kind of, they know, played right back 20 years ago, 10 years ago, now will do. But obviously you guys, management team and players, kind of pass through in much shorter. So that's kind of important, isn't it? Just to feel part of history.
Absolutely, because, you know, all being well, Bolton Wanderers will get to 6,000 games and then everyone will remember the 5,000th game and what the team looked like, who was in that team, who was the manager, who was on the coaching staff. So as I said, we've left our little print in the history of Bolton Wanderers, which is great credit to everybody, you know, not just myself, but to the players, to my coaching staff, the management team, the senior management team at the club. Sharon Britton and the board have done unbelievable things with Bolton Wanderers, and number one, to rescue the club, but number two, now to have a virtual sustainable model and to be progressing and improving with that sustainability is something to be very proud of.
Yeah. With a new minority shareholder, I hear.
Yeah, I mean, there's been one or two rumblings about that. Look, I think as a young coach and manager, it was important. The minute I took this job, the reason I took the job was, number one, because Sharon Britton, you know, everything when I spoke to her, it was just everything that I wanted to hear and everything that I envisioned for myself and for a football club is to go on a journey together, not have to have, you know, a stepping stone club and keep moving around to progress. I wanted to take one club all of the way, and that was my vision. And we shared that vision and also to do good in the game. I think we all love football, Clem, and at times the industry we know can be toxic, and football is a real powerful tool to do good with. And if we can connect with the community, do good in the community, really build trust with our fan base and the rest of the town, is again something to be incredibly proud of, and we've worked tirelessly hard to try and do that.
It also shows a tie-in, the fact that you, I don't know what your arrangement are, but you do have a few shares in the holding company of the club.
Yeah, sorry, just to answer that, Clem, it's more like, just so we're all aligned, because Sharon, in her own businesses and the businesses that she invests in, is always of the opinion that, you know, people that do well and succeed should share a part of that that journey. And yeah, so that was the conversation we had, and I was extremely honoured to be given those shares.
Yeah, and it sort of smells of a stability. It smells of a commitment from your point of view, from their point. So I don't know whether smell is the right word, mate, but, you know, it kind of, it sends the right messages right throughout the whole club, doesn't it? That you guys are a partnership for a while.
Yeah, exactly that. And I think that's really hit the nail on the head and explained it really well. We're very much aligned, we're very much together, and that's a rarity in football. I'm extremely fortunate to have the owner and the board that I've got, because like every manager, there has been times in my almost 3-year spell now where we've had sticky spells, and it would have been easy to change managers. But also on the flip side of that, we've done pretty well, and also there'll be clubs that have paid an interest in me, and the same loyalty is reciprocated. So, yeah, it just means we're very much aligned. We're very much on the same journey together. And I think them shares show as proof to everybody that that is exactly what we are doing.
When you see the carnage in the game with managerial turnover and particularly young managers, do you think you've got your timing right? That, you know, that couple of months you had in charge of Chesterfield, you know, they did go down, then you moved to Barrow and things. You've been able to get a base in place before things got even more ridiculous. I look at something like Cardiff, this situation where two perfectly good young men have tried their very best, been given the opportunity, but not been given much of an opportunity. Do you understand what I'm saying with that question? Has it got harder and harder even in the time, even in the 5 years since you've been involved?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'd agree with that. Obviously, when I was given the caretaker role at Chesterfield, the club was already relegated, but those three games really, you know, lit a fire inside me that this is what I wanted to do. And it would have been easy to try and go down an academy route, a more comfortable job. And I ended up going to Barrow. And at the time, to be honest, I didn't even know where it was in the country. And they took a huge risk on me and I took a huge risk with them. And all of a sudden, we created something really magical. And from then on, I got a wonderful opportunity. There's not very often you get the chance to manage a club the size of Bolton Wanderers in League Two. That was extremely complicated and tough, given we just had the salary cap introduced. So we were at a disadvantage to everybody else because they already had squads. We didn't have any players. We'd just been relegated from League One. So it was a complete rebuild, and really fortunate again to have the promotion in the first year. Then we've progressed since then. So I've had a lot of success very early, which is good, but I've also had some bad spells as well. And it's how you come out of those bad spells and you learn your lessons to how you improve and what defines you as a manager. In terms of young managers, look, they're great to get these opportunities, but we all know what we're getting into. It's really cutthroat. It's really difficult. The one thing I will say is I've been involved in football my entire life, Clem. I love the game so much. But being a manager now has really changed my opinion, that I just don't want to do this forever.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, I always envisaged myself, if the game would have me, to be involved in the game my entire life. But it takes that much intensity, it takes that much hard work, takes that much sacrifice, that, you know, I want to achieve my personal goals. And then I think it's time to enjoy my life and enjoy everything else which is surrounding me, and not just be completely overwhelmed by football and what it does to you, if you know what I'm saying.
Have you got a number in your head? Are we talking 5 years, 10 years, 15 years? Have you got a target? How old are you now? 40?
I'm 41 now. I mean, yeah. To be honest, no is the answer to that. What I will say is, I'm not there yet and nowhere close to being there yet. I'm loving my job and I much prefer being a manager to I ever did being a player. But what I'm saying is I may well have a timeout, a bit like Pep has, a bit like Eddie Howe has, a sabbatical, maybe for 6 to 12 months, where you can take some time, do some travelling, improve myself. It's really difficult to consistently try to improve yourself as a person and as a manager while you're in post, because it takes so much of your time. So I think to have that time out of the game to refresh, regroup, have a look at what you've done right, have a look at what's gone wrong, and then try and learn from that process is really important to me. I'd like to do that on my own terms and not when I've been given the sack as well. So that's something that I've thought about. But yeah, as I said, I have so much respect for somebody like Neil Warnock, Roy Hodgson, these managers that have managed in the 70s. It's incredible. But I'm guessing if you spoke to them on a personal level, the amount of sacrifice that they've, you know, given to the lives and to the families to be involved in this game for so long is huge. And that's not something that I want to do forever.
Mm. Like sacrificing Valentine's night with your missus to, you know, take charge.
Listen,
of
the I was in love with what I saw last night. So that's all that mattered to me.
You've joined that up quite magnificently. You've evolved, obviously, over the course of your time in management. It seems that the pace of evolution in your squad as well has picked up, maybe from having to make do and mend with your first season at Bolton and a certain type of player. It's a great compliment as well, isn't it, to you, that so many Premier League clubs are willing to lend you their young up-and-coming starlets, but you must have had to make that decision. You're happy to go that route, because obviously it ain't forever when you bring them in, is it? You know you've got them for a limited period of time.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a few parts to that. I think number one, I think other than the National League to League Two, where I do think it's possible to have back-to-back promotions, I don't believe the way the game has gone now that you can do it from League Two to the Championship back-to-back. I just don't believe you can. And likewise, League One to the Premier League back-to-back. I just think the game has evolved and changed so much. There's some monster clubs at every level of football now, but in particular League One and the Championship. And it's a progression. So from League Two to League One, it's having to transition into becoming a competitive League One team. That takes time. That takes transfer windows. You've got squads for League Two, which some of those, no disrespect to some of the players that I've had, but can only take you so far into League One. So every transfer window, you're trying to re-recruit to improve again. But going back to the sustainability piece, we're trying to do that responsibly, which is also difficult. And then where we are in the country, it is a huge hub of football. The Northwest is massive with some monster clubs, some big, big football clubs. And why would we not want to take advantage of that? Being close to Man City, being close to Liverpool, being close to Man United. Going back to the sustainability piece, if we can improve our team by taking on some of the best young players from those big clubs, why would we not do it? It's a no-brainer. What we had to do was prove the model to these big clubs to show the way we play and will help and suit them. We've had many conversations with all the big clubs and now we are entrusted with their best players, which is great credit to us, not just to me and my coaching staff, but to the football club in general, that they trust us again. Obviously, Bolton Wanderers' name's been through the mud in the recent, not too distant past, sorry. And we've worked really, really hard to gain people's respect and gain people's trust on and off the pitch. And we've saw the benefits to that this season with the five loanees that we've brought in.
Sky Bet League One fixtures this coming weekend. Shrewsbury Town point in their midweek fixture after six consecutive wins, travel to Accrington. It's Cambridge United against Oxford United. Michael Duff returns to Cheltenham for the first time to face his former assistant Wade Elliott with Barnsley. Derby, who've dropped 5 points from their last couple of games, are at home to Charlton. Ipswich, just two league wins in 10, entertain bottom club Forest Green Rovers. The leaders, Plymouth, are at home to Fleetwood. Second placed, Sheffield Wednesday, at home to MK Dons. And there's the small matter of seventh against third as Wickham Wanderers entertain Ian's Bolton Wanderers. How addictive, finally, are promotion campaigns? You obviously had three as a player. You've had two so far. As a manager, is there something quite evocative about them? You smell the same characteristics at certain points in the football calendar.
Yeah, I think so. And I think to have success and promotion teams, you need a togetherness. And it's not just the togetherness of the squad of players and the management team and coaching staff. It's as a club in general. It's the wider club, the board, the fan base. And I think we're sensing that we've got that togetherness now and that connection. Look, we're all sportsmen. We love the game, as I've said many times in this interview, and we are all addicted to winning. Winning is the best feeling on a Saturday. And if you can consistently win, then it's amazing. The game's brilliant, but you also have to stay level-headed and pretty consistent with your behaviour, because you know you're only ever one defeat from a bad run. That's just the game. Winning back-to-back games of 5-0 doesn't make Saturday's game any easier. It just means the players are very confident, but we also know that it's going to be a really difficult game. Gareth's done an incredible job there. They're competing again. I think they've won the last four, so two informed teams. And we'll both go toe-to-toe. It's just the way we are. Gareth wants to win. I want to win. There'll be no trying to get a point. Both teams will be going out there to win the game. So hopefully we produce a good advert for League One football.
I bet you the Adams Park groundsman's reinforcing his nets, though, after what you've done the last couple of games. Automatic in your sights until it's mathematically impossible. You will, your foot to the boards. You've got the top two in your sights.
Look, for us, it's just about the next game. And I know that's a really boring answer, Clem.
Yeah,
I know it's not the answer that you want to hear, but look, there's still a third of the season left, and it feels like you're on the home straight, but actually there's almost a third of the season left. So for us, it's just the next game. The next game is Wickham. We've got a really big week coming up. We've got Wickham on Saturday, and then we've got the semi-final of the Papa John's on Wednesday against Accrington away. So two huge games, you know, very important for us and the football club, and we'll be doing our best to get two victories.
Yeah. You know, you said it's always with you, literally every second of every day. When you finish chatting to me now, even though you've got domestic stuff to do, you're at home with the family tonight, it's never there's never a moment when a little piece of football's not in your head.
I never switch off, ever. I live and breathe it. As I said, I love the game. I put everything I can into it and to try and make me the best that I can be, but the players the best they can be, the club the best it can be. And that takes hours of work. You know, no stone left unturned. That's how I see things. And again, that goes back to the point about sacrifice and about enjoying the rest of your life. Yeah, it's pretty intense, but I love what I do.
Don't overdo it. Great to talk to you.
Thanks, Clem. Good to see you.
Wow, what a great couple of chats we've had on this episode. Your Sky Bet League 2 fixtures this coming weekend. Early kickoff, 2 o'clock for 4th place Northampton against Grimsby. And then all the rest of these are 3 o'clock. 3rd place Carlisle at home to Colchester. Only take the point from their last 9, but still in that last automatic promotion place. The leaders Leighton Orient are at home to Crawley. Another big game at the bottom of the table. Rochdale, who are bottom, against Gillingham, have pulled themselves out of the bottom 2 with 4 wins out of 6 to 20. First, 6th place Salford entertain Swindon. Probably the game of the day is Stockport County against Stevenage. That is 7th against 2nd. And Tranmere it is, who entertain Mansfield Town. That is it for this episode. A big, big thank you to Ian, Evert and to Bailey. Right, if you've enjoyed it, then please do give us a 5-star rating. Press the subscribe button and share on your socials. If you'd like to get in touch, our email address is podcast@efl.com. It's podcast@efl.com. I'm Mark Clement. Join us again soon for another episode of
The Official EFL Podcast.